the morning of July 18th, and a lobster fisherman named Hooper Goodwin has left for the day to check his traps. And as he brings his traps to the surface, he notices that something's amiss. There's an anchor that's seemingly attached itself to the side of this lobster trap. Uh-oh. And dangling from the lobster is some fishing line and a rope. And the rope leads into the water, and attached to the rope, he finds the body of a woman. A woman who'd been missing for 6 days, found in the exact spot a famous witch named Lori Cabot said she'd be found only hours earlier.
What?
We invite you to join us on our hunt for all things spooky.
We're here for the tricks and the treats.
I'm Elise.
And I'm Haley.
And this is Easy Bake Coven.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Well, you know, got out here to my studio to record, and my dad's banging on shit next door.
I'm like, are you leaf blowing the fucking sky?
No, he's like literally banging. I don't know, just banging on shit. I went out there and I was like, he's like, what's going on? I was about to record the podcast, and he just keeps banging, and I go out, I'm like, so are you gonna be banging much longer? Nope, no more banging. Like, great. Oh, you hear that? I don't know what that was. Some loud noise.
Well, right now, there is a miniature game happening mere feet outside the door of the room that I'm in. I have stacked pillows along the openings of the door to try and like dampen the noise. But so if you also hear...
Wait, is that whole event still noises. Happening?
No. No, this is just a one-off Wednesday night.
Just a wild miniature Wednesday.
Oh, and look at this. Most generous pour of wine.
Yes.
I've already drank some.
Nice.
So at least I'm going to enjoy myself this evening.
I'm glad.
Well, I guess that depends on the content, but
I can't promise
enjoy my time with you.
Actually, I think...
Based on your Google searches that you shared with me, it may not be a fun time.
Yeah, I texted Haley and I was like, sometimes I worry that the things I Google make me look like I'm really guilty of something or I'm planning to be guilty of something. Like, what does... second degree murder constitute?
The great irony is that like right before you texted me that, I had just Googled Lake Tahoe foot fondler. So I was like, I understand this completely. More than you know. I just Googled foot fondler.
Is it me?
Just wanted to know if they'd caught me yet.
And the amount of times we joke about you selling pictures of your feet really just ties it all together.
Just beautiful.
Chef's kiss.
Just a wonderful full circle podcast moment.
Yeah, I'm like thinking like, well, if they ever for some reason see my search history, hopefully they will also see that I do a true crime podcast and it's all intertwined and
it's relevant. Oh my God.
Not
wait,
planning.
This is a have I told you the story about my mom and the Wi-Fi in Hawaii before?
No.
Okay.
So I'm good. So excited.
This is so good. This is just a nice
little
tangent to start. But what is more relevant than us having tangents?
Nothing.
Okay. So when Matt and I were first dating, like a week in, we started dating on the 14th of December. And then he came for Christmas and spent like 10 days with my family. Like that was his introduction to my family.
Wow.
And he brought Cards Against Humanity. This is like when Cards Against Humanity was just first a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought that as his Christmas gift to my parents.
Oh boy.
Yeah. Now luckily like my parents, that was great. They loved it.
Yeah.
So they were going to Hawaii with their friends in January. So it was like a few weeks later. They took Cards Against Humanity with them.
Oh, no.
And they're like at their condo. They like rent, it's like a timeshare or something.
Uh-huh.
Maybe it's in Mexico. Anyway, it's a timeshare somewhere warm. And they're like there for a few days. They play Cards Against Humanity one night. And then the next day, the internet like craps out and it stops working. And my mom is convinced that it's because she was Googling unsavory terms that she didn't know on the Cards Against Humanity cards. So they call the internet service
down in Mexico
or wherever they were. And she calls and she's like, yeah, our Wi-Fi is not working, da 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 da. And my mom goes, this is so awkward.
Oh, no.
I think I might know what's going on. And the internet guy's like, what? And she's like, okay, have you heard of this game? Cards Against Humanity, da, da, da. And he's like, no. And she's like, okay, well, it's this game. Anyway, there were like a lot of terms that we didn't that were like of a sexual nature. And we were Googling them. And now I just wonder if our internet has been flagged and turned off. And that's why our internet
silence on the other line.
Like, I'm just going to put you on hold for a minute. And he comes back a few minutes later and he's like, yeah, so there's a maximum of 4 devices allowed on your router at any given time. So you guys must have had more than 4 devices. So it just booted you all off. We'll just have to reset the router and you'll be fine now.
And she was like, God.
So it wasn't these sexual terms that we were Googling.
He's like, ma'am, you realize people watch porn in their rooms? Porn.
It was like, mom, do you know the shit that people Google? Are you fucking kidding God. Me? Like, have you heard of pornography before?
Wow.
Like, it was so fun. I was just dying.
That is
She's like,
hilarious.
I was absolutely mortified. I can't believe I shared that we were Googling those things with the internet guy. I'm like, you fucking idiot.
I mean,
like,
we have Matt to thank
you
for
sweet
that.
Angel. Yeah. That you don't even know
sweet
what
angel,
darkness exists
and you
on the internet.
Idiot.
You think that your internet would get shut off because you Googled, like, I don't even know.
Unsavory terms.
Like, what even is in Cards Against Humanity?
I don't know. Like,
that we
have poop on this
on
or
night.
Yeah, pooping on things.
No, thank you. No, thank you.
Oh, like, sweet
oh,
Lori.
Mom.
That's very
oh, sweet.
Sweet
Lori.
That's like her in a nutshell, like that story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. Mm-hmm. I love that. Yep. That was a great way to open the episode.
Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah. Hello, it's us. Welcome. Speaking of the podcast, I just feel like
let's speak of it.
I feel like I just, you know, you kind of inspired me because I was like, let me just Google unknown true crime things, like how you Googled unsolved mysteries. And I Googled unsolved mysteries that have been solved. And then that led me down episodes of unsolved mysteries, which then led me to perhaps, and by unsolved mysteries, I mean the show. And that led me to perhaps the most perfect episode for our podcast because it encapsulates all of the things we love, the paranormal, true crime, and beautiful towns on the Massachusetts coast, Cape Cod kind of
yes,
shit.
Oh, yes, please and thank you.
So, like,
yep.
I read the story and I was
sign
like,
me
oh,
up.
Like, is this our, like...
Was this written for
exactly.
us?
Exactly. This is our story.
Is this going to be a new best, most downloaded episode?
Perhaps.
Yep, I can already tell.
It's happening.
Amazing.
So tonight, we are talking about a witch, a murder on the high seas, and the sixth sense that brought it all together.
Oh,
I told you it was perfect.
Shit.
Told you it was perfect.
Oh, it is perfect.
I kept reading and I was like, oh my God, no way. Oh my God, this is so, I have to cover this. So very excited.
I can't wait. I'm excited to hear what it is.
And coincidentally, our story begins in the year of our Lord, AKA 1991, because that's when we were both born.
Because we're so young.
So young.
So recent.
So youthful.
It's just full of youth and vigor. Mm.
And as fate would have it, we are heading to the land of our people, the place from which our ancestors hail, because we're witches, not because we're actually from there.
Witches.
Salem, Massachusetts.
Salem.
Oh my God.
Mm.
Also,
take me back.
I was like, I mean, it's August. It's like getting close to witchy season. I mean, we're practically
I was literally
in fall.
Thinking. Okay, like the only bad thing about only doing like one, like
yeah,
full episode per month mm-hmm. each is like, oh, we only get one chance at
I know.
Halloween, like October
I thought about
episode.
That. I was like, oh,
it's got to be good. I got to bring my A-game.
Got to bring
next
it.
Month.
Although, I mean, September can also be witchy month, like,
and like every month.
Every month.
Is a witchy
I mean, pretty
month
much. That's
world.
What this podcast
like,
is.
Every perpetually. Month. Yeah, that's what we're trying to manifest here.
Yeah, to bring about. I ordered Eloise mm-hmm. some really cute Halloween things, and I was like, well, when they get here, I'm just going to start having her wear them yep. immediately. So
it's practically fall.
Practically fall. So
that may have been why I was asking you to sign the other day.
I cannot wait to see what it is.
I'm so excited. Okay, so we're okay.
In Salem, Massachusetts.
There are black cats aplenty.
Yes, and witches and murder.
Well, there's a lot of that there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going back to July. It's the morning of July 18th, and a lobster fisherman named Hooper Goodwin has left for the day to check his traps.
Great name.
Great name, right? Mm-hmm. He's off the coast of Marblehead in Massachusetts Bay. It's a beautiful morning. The town is just 3 miles from Salem, so he's got this beautiful view of downtown mm-hmm. Salem. He's out checking his lobster pots, and as he brings his traps to the surface, he notices that something's amiss. There's an anchor that's seemingly attached itself to the side of this lobster trap. Uh-oh. And dangling from the lobster is some fishing line and a rope. And the rope leads into the water, and attached to the rope, he finds the body of a woman. A woman who'd been missing for 6 days, found in the exact spot a famous witch named Lori Cabot said she'd be found only hours earlier.
What? I have goosebumps on my whole yes! body. You're such a good storyteller. Oh, I'm you. Captivated already.
I'm really trying to sell it.
Consider it sold.
Great.
Purchase.
Take my money. Yeah. So, by all accounts, Martha Brailsford was a kind, generous, and thoughtful person. She was a resident of Salem, Massachusetts. She gave regularly to animal rights organizations, cared deeply about her neighbors. She and her husband, Brian, had moved to the Willows Historic area of Salem in 1985, just six cool. years earlier. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I did a little sleuthing on the neighborhood, and it just looks dreamy. Old, cute, Victorian houses, you know, just like picture perfect. Yes.
Where we need to be.
Exactly. And she and her husband were living the dream because they'd purchased an old inn and renovated it to be the home of their dreams. So, like, really incredible. Doing everything we want to do. The two met when Martha was only 17 years old. She was a freshman at Endicott College, and they dated for years before they finally married. Together, they enjoyed sailing, windsurfing, skiing. They were always out and about doing water sports. And she was also beloved by Brian's family, and she became quite close with her mother-in-law, Frances Wozmack. Like, they just were a really tight-knit family. Everybody loved each other. Things were going well. Martha was beautiful. I'll upload a picture of her to the Instagram. She just had a really beautiful face, and there's this picture of her in, like, this flower bush. Like, it's a very, like, clear portrait someone took of her, and it's funny to imagine them, like just go stand in that bush of flowers, but it works. It's fine.
That's how, you know, that's what you got to do.
What you got to do, yeah.
Nowadays, that's just all of Instagram.
Yeah,
in the spring, right. It's just white women in camellias.
Yes.
Just,
it's pretty much it. She was ahead of her time, Martha.
She knew.
Martha did most of the renovations on the inn herself, and she must have been pretty good at it because shortly before her disappearance, she'd quit her corporate job to work for herself as an interior designer full time.
Oh, hell yeah.
So 37, she was doing pretty well. Their home featured a beautiful roof deck with sweeping views of the Atlantic, which was perfect inspiration for Martha because she loved to incorporate her passion for the sea into her artwork. I'm not sure what her medium was, but from what I've read, she created beautiful underwater seascapes complete with flowing water, fish, and turtles. So I'm assuming paintings.
Like painting?
Yeah. I tried finding pictures of her art, and no, there were none. So I don't think she was, like, you know, super well known.
Yeah.
But she was beloved in her neighborhood and in her community. Mm-hmm. So. In fact, it was her love for the sea that made her move from Ohio to Salem in the first place. It seemed like she was called to it, which is rather dark that what she was called to actually was where she met her demise. Yeah, exactly. Willows sounds, like I said, your picture-perfect neighborhood. It was kind of close to this public park where there's, like, an arcade and, like, a mini carnival. Kind of reminded me of, like, Coney Island. And it draws tourists and, you know, beautiful place to live. Like, and quaint, picturesque, just everything you want in a nice neighborhood. And so Martha used to take her dog Rudy for walks through her neighborhood. And that's how she first met her neighbor, Thomas Maimone.
Uh-oh.
Maimone also would go for walks with his little corgi, and the two struck up a friendship. Often they would leave their neighborhood and walk along the nearby Winter Island, which also looks beautiful and picturesque, like everywhere on the freaking East Coast.
Mm-hmm. Anywhere in the Northeast.
Mm-hmm. Thomas was 46, and by all accounts, he was also a really friendly neighbor. He and his wife, Patricia, had purchased a townhome 3 years earlier, seemed to be happily married. Like Martha and Brian, they were both avid sailors. They owned a 28-foot sailboat called Counterpoint that they left moored in the Palmer Cove Yacht Club nearby. Maimone said he was a Vietnam vet, and people described him as generally pretty pleasant.
Yeah. When you say said he was a Vietnam vet, is that because we're going to find out later he was lying?
Or there's just no proof that he was a Vietnam vet? I say said because there are things he definitely lies about. The articles I read weren't clear if he actually did serve. He later says that he saw action in the war, or saw action in, when he was in the army, like saw
combat.
Combat, yeah. And then people say that's not true.
Means he just saw it on the television.
Saw it. yeah. But like for me, I imagine if you were a Vietnam vet, you had to have seen action. So I'm like, was he not actually in the army at all? I don't know. So that's why I say he said.
Who knows? Allegedly.
I actually have apparently and allegedly written so many times because I'm like, oh, I don't know what's true and what's not. But it is true that he worked as an engineer for the famous board game company Parker Brothers, which I thought was crazy. Like, I'm sure they didn't love that. This fucking, we're going to find out, douchebag worked for Parker Brothers.
They're everywhere.
They are. For some reason, he told Martha he was about to be laid off. Didn't say why, but he needed to start looking for another job. And being this kind, generous person that she is, she agrees to help him with his resume, which I feel like if a grown-ass man is asking me to help him with his resume, red flags, not going
to
do
are
that.
Are you about to be laid off because you're about to kill me?
Right? Yeah. Am I about to be laid off by you? Because it feels
from
like it.
From the earth.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. Go to a career coach if you need help with a resume.
Also, you're an engineer for Parker Brothers. Like, do you really need help with your resume? And how would just a regular woman know how to help with a resume for
an
engineer?
She's an interior designer / artist.
Doesn't really
Do you want help with your penis? Yeah. Is that really what you're asking for?
Yes. Yes, he did. Turns out.
Men.
This is a tangent, but, you know, sometimes Ben will get his, like, panties in a bunch about me being, like, men. And the other day, because I'm a new parent now, I was like, I need to see what sex offenders are in my area so I can be aware of them.
Oh, God.
And thankfully, not many right near me, but every single one, wouldn't you know, was a man. And
not
I was
funny.
Like, Ben, you know when you get annoyed that there I talk about men? Look at this. Do you see any
proof
women?
That you're all garbage.
This is what they are. Men.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so sorry about that tangent. Be safe, people. Look who's in your neighborhood.
Well, check who's in your neighborhood.
I was like memorizing their faces. I was like, even though you're not near me, I need to know.
There's
the
only one on Dashaun, and I know what his face looks like. Thank God. Actually used to see him all the time.
Is he the drunk guy who was always kind of on the side of the road?
No. You mean the one with long hair?
Yes.
No, he is not a sex offender.
Oh,
well,
sorry, man.
He's not registered.
Oh.
No, it's like a guy.
Possible.
Anyone could be a sex offender.
It's true. They're among us.
No, it's a guy with like, this sounds so bad, but like his eyes look two different directions.
Oh,
he's,
no.
Like, balding.
I know who you're
he's
talking
sort
about.
Sort of a cul-de-sac.
Yes, yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. And he would like walk around with suspenders, like jeans and like suspenders
I know
and a dirty
exactly
like, flannel.
Who you're talking about.
Literally what you picture when you picture a sex offender.
Yep.
Child sex offender.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
I haven't seen him in like maybe years though. So maybe he left
that's great.
COVID.
That'd be great. It'd be excellent. See you later. I mean, you could check online.
Goodbye.
No. Unless.
I should.
He's still registered to an address or something.
He was registered to the library because he was homeless. Ooh. This is such a tangent. The people on the podcast do not need to know the specifics of the one
the drama
sex offender on Dashaun Island. Intrigue. Island intrigue.
Oh, man. Okay. Anyway. Moving on.
If a grown man asks you to help with his resume and you have no background or experience in his field, it's about his penis and stay away from it.
Yes.
Unless... that's what you want.
Right. Yeah. Unless you're into
you know,
the penis.
If he's like, come help me with my resume.
Unless he's Ryan Gosling. I'll help you with your resume. No, I'm like, I'm not an actor, but I'll gladly help you with your resume.
But I know a lot about helping you. Sir.
Remember when I had that dream where I was his agent and had no experience? See? Same thing.
Done. Easy.
Phew. Okay. Back on track.
Okay. Back to the podcast.
Yes. So getting back to darkness. On July 12th, Maimoni invited Martha to come aboard his boat, the Counterpoint, for a nice sail around the
bay. Don't go on his boat.
Don't go on his boat, Martha.
Never go on a boat. Nope. Remember the submarine episode?
I know. Actually, there's a lot. It was funny. I was telling Ben the story, and he was have I heard this before? And I said, no, you're thinking of the Kim Ball episode, which shares a lot of similarities to this story.
Just never get on a boat with a man.
Don't do it.
Unless it's your dad.
Even sometimes them.
Not my dad, just kidding. Just don't ever get on a boat with a man.
Men.
Full men. Stop. Which brings us to our previous point. Okay. So she agrees to get on his boat to help him with his resume on his boat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In her defense, the only defense, it was 1:30 in the afternoon. So she's probably like, well, he's not going to do something sexual in the middle of the day. And he did.
She underestimates sex criminal.
She does.
Oh, no.
It's no surprise she accepted because she loved the water and she figures she knows him. Yeah. She's like, we've been going on walks with the dogs. Like, how much of a freak can he be? He can be a freak, right. Martha. He can.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So I read some articles that said she told her husband she was going. Others did not say that. They said she tied her dog Ruby up outside and went on her way, probably assuming it wasn't going to be very long. Regardless, she makes this fateful decision to join him on the boat.
No.
And it was that Friday, boarding the vessel at the Salem Willows Pier, that Martha would last be seen alive.
No.
So as day turns into night, her husband Brian comes home around 9 p.m. and Martha's not home. He becomes understandably concerned. He spends the whole night looking for her. And when he can't find her, he reports her missing to the police at 1 a.m. on Saturday morning.
Oh, no.
Now, I would assume that it is correct that she had told him she was going on the boat because he goes in search of Maimoni. And when he finds him.
So he knew who she was with.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. So he asks Maimoni if he'd seen her. And Maimoni, like, feigns ignorance and almost kind of acts like, who are you talking about? Who? And Brian's like, you know, my wife, Martha. And he's like, oh, no, I barely know her. Why would she come on my boat, especially without you, sir? Like, why would we go sailing without her husband?
Oh, no.
And then he has the fucking nerve to be like, but we should go on a sailing trip sometime. Why don't the two of you come out? And then when Brian says, well, she's missing, Maimoni says, oh, I'll say a prayer for her. Yeah.
Keep my wife's name out your mouth.
Exactly, you nasty
bastard. To quote Will Smith.
Yeah. Wow, look at you. So cultured.
No, it's when he slapped what's his face at the Academy Awards.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, get my wife's name out your mouth.
See, I never knew what he actually said. I just saw the slap. Yeah.
Something along those lines. Okay, I love of it. Like, I like it. Get my wife's name out of your mouth.
Maimoni also lied to the police when questioned. First, he says, she's never been on board my boat. I don't know what you're talking about. But it obviously doesn't take too long for reports of the two of them being seen together to surface. Like, it was 1:30 in the afternoon at the Salem Pier. Like, I'm sure people
There's
saw
you. There's people around.
Yeah. There was actually an owner of a nearby boat shop who told the police, like, yeah, I saw the two of them together. They were definitely together.
I mean, not good that they were together, but good that someone saw. There were witnesses. Yeah.
And suddenly, Maimoni remembers, oh, yeah, Martha was on my boat. Must have slipped my mind. Guy. But he assures police that he dropped her off at the Winter Island Pier where she went on her merry way. And that's what's similar to Kim Vall, the guy who drove the submarine.
Yes.
Was like,
yeah.
Oh, no, no, finally, I dropped her off.
Oh, yeah, no, she was, but I dropped her off.
Yeah, exactly. Total lies. So something doesn't add up. Police are starting to get suspicious, and he must have realized that they were going to start asking more questions because he changes his story a third time.
Oh my God.
Martha had been on board the Counterpoint, and tragically, while trying to repair the boat's mainsail, she'd been hit by the boom and was thrown overboard.
This is just like Kim Vall.
Yeah. Pretty disgusting.
She hit her head.
Yeah.
Remember, that's what he said. She hit her head. And then I buried her at sea or some shit.
That's exactly. It's like pretty much the same story.
Oh my God.
And he tells the story in great detail. He says it
happened. So why didn't he go seek help if she fell overboard?
Great question.
Okay, sorry, I'm interrupting you. I'm just getting fired up.
It is an excellent question. Why would you not go ask for help when someone accidentally dies? Seems pretty obvious. He goes into great detail about it, says it happened in Gloucester. I'm maybe saying that wrong. Sorry, New England people. And he even offers...
It might be Gloucester, but I feel like that's...
Okay, Gloucester. Your, I like that.
Maybe. Yeah.
The word that's spelled that looks like Gloucester.
Gloucester.
Gloucester. There it is.
Just really piss off some Northeasterners.
And he even offers to take the police to the spot. I don't think they take him up on it, but... You know, in his story, he says that he tried to revive her. He pulls her from the water after she's hit by the boom. He conveniently removes all of her wet clothing because he doesn't want her to have hypothermia, wraps her up in a towel. And then when she wouldn't wake up, he panicked and tossed the body overboard.
That's why he took off all of her clothing. That's why she's naked.
Yes.
Oh, fuck you, exactly. You fucking piece of shit.
Yeah. He later says that the reason she was hit by the boom was because of a rogue wave that had knocked her overboard. Like, how many times can you change a story and not be arrested?
Oh, my God.
It's very confusing. Clearly, things are starting to smell a little fishy, but they didn't think he was really much of a flight risk, so they let him go.
Because they're like, we're just going to gather information, gather evidence,
right?
And then, like, and charge him when we have all.
Like, where is he going to go? Yeah. We'll just go arrest him once we have everything. Police impound the boat and report that although it had been cleaned pretty well with the help of special lights, they found blood in the bathroom and later a blood-stained sail from the sailboat. Now, I couldn't find any like legit information from newspaper stories about this next part, but I also am not surprised because newspapers probably wouldn't take it that seriously and police probably wouldn't report it to the newspapers. But according to Unsolved Mysteries, and let's face it, Robert Stack is the real authority. Yes, thank you.
Yep.
And actually in Unsolved Mysteries, they did interview the police chief. So like that's pretty proof enough for me.
Yep.
And they decided it was time to turn to the paranormal to solve the case, even though it does seem pretty open and shut to me.
Okay.
Gotta turn to the paranormal.
My senses are telling me that this fucker did it and he threw her body out in the ocean in the bay.
You must be a witch.
And it's going to be naked. Weird. My paranormal senses are also telling me that she was sexually assaulted. It's weird.
It's bizarre that you know that. Magic. You must be seeing into another dimension. I am a witch. I mean, I know it. Yep. Don't we all?
I have talents. Yeah.
So local police captain Paul Murphy decides it's time to bring in the big guns, Salem's official witch, Lori Cabot. And yes, her name is Lori, just like your mother.
I know. I wonder if this woman also Googles pornographic terms and gets her internet shut off. She already knows them all. She doesn't need to Google it.
Yeah, she's a witch. She can see through time and space and into all the dark orifices of our brains. And Lori Cabot, let me tell you, is a peach. Her website looks like Prince and Stevie Nicks had a baby, and then they used that as inspiration for an 80s album cover.
To the T. It's amazing. Is she still like in existence?
Yes,
still alive?
She is 90 years old. Google her right now. I want you to see this.
Do you think that website? We could become friends with her?
I have dreams of her being
Lori
on the podcast.
Cabot.
Yes. L-A-U-R-I.
I have dreams of her adopting me. No offense to you.
You already are living with her.
She doesn't listen. American priestess. Fuck yeah.
Do you see this picture?
Oh my God. This is incredible.
Is my description not on point?
Literally perfect. I would also add like a little David Bowie in there.
Oh yeah, totally. I saw the website. I was like, oh my God.
Holy shit. What, like, is there an updated photo? Oh yes.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Oh. I know. She looks like someone dressed up as a Hogwarts professor.
She looks like someone who'd live on Vashon.
She totally does. Like, she looks like I would chill with her at the coffee stand at 2:30 in the afternoon every day.
Tell me all your stories, Lori.
Yeah, just tell me. I'm just here to soak it up.
Yep. Well, I have some of her stories to tell you.
Okay, tell
me. She's written many books, such as Power of the Witch, Love Magic, and my favorite, The Witch in Every Woman. Need to read that.
New tramp stamp. No. It's too much, Haley.
Too much.
Stop.
Too long.
Not everything is a tramp stamp.
I mean, if you have enough back,
anything
it could
be. That sounds like a challenge. Let me go grab my cookie dough.
Next, Paige will be knocking down a wall and pulling you out. She obviously calls herself a witch, also a psychic, medium, teacher, and author.
And my new best friend.
And our next podcast guest. Please somehow hear this, Lori, and be a guest on our show.
Yep.
But like I said at the beginning, she is the official witch of Salem. And how does one become the official witch?
By just putting that on your website?
No, it's official. Officially given by a governor. It's amazing.
What?
This is maybe my favorite detail of this whole episode.
Same.
So since Massachusetts has been a commonwealth, they've awarded something called the Patriots Award, which is basically given to a person in the community who's dedicated to improving lives of their fellow citizens. So mm-hmm. in 1975, Governor Michael S. Dukakis, yes, the same Dukakis who ran for president in 1988, yep. bestowed that award upon Lori. And on her website, this is confusing, it says that those who win this award are given the privilege of wearing a tri-cornered hat, and I'm not sure what this means, but the privilege of grazing cows on the Boston Commonwealth. I'm like owning them or grazing them?
You're allowed to bring your cows.
Yeah, or like letting them be on the, yeah, I don't know.
I don't know what it means, but also I want to have
that privilege. Yeah, I want that privilege. It also,
I want my cows to graze on the Boston Commonwealth.
It's specified on her website. Lori has yet to do either of those things.
Lori? Come on. Clock's a ticking.
Wear your
hat. Bitch, you're 90.
Anyway, the proclamation she receives from Dukakis says, I proclaim Lori Cabot the official witch of Salem for her work with children with special needs. So that's really sweet.
That's also not the reason that you want to become the official witch. That's like, true. Did she cure them of their special needs? That's the least witchy. Like, you were kind? No. Yeah, you were just, anyone can be kind.
Well,
that's
as you'll
witchy.
See, doing no harm is one of the rules of being a witch. So, yeah, I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
But my favorite part about her being the official witch of Salem is that her first act as the official witch was to welcome artists that were visiting Salem from China.
Oh.
They'd been invited to display their art in the Boston Museum of Science. And I guess these were the first group of artists from China since Nixon had established like new relations between America mm-hmm. and China. Mm-hmm. So the first person that these people see stepping off the plane is Lori
Hell
Cabot,
yeah.
the official witch of Salem.
In, like, her robes yeah. with the like pentagram
yeah.
necklace.
I should say
welcome.
She looks like exactly like you want her to look, like full on black robes. She wears the pentagram around her neck. She has rings on every yep. finger. Her hair in the back is black and the front it's gray. She's got like
incredible
Cleopatra-esque makeup on her eyes. Like she's
yep.
just
yeah,
the epitome of a Salem witch.
She reminds me of Elvira in some of these
totally
photos.
Oh, that's an awesome
if you're listening
photo.
To this podcast, just Google
yes,
her right now.
Google all the images of her
so you can see what we're getting at.
She says that this was the first time in history that a high-standing official had openly recognized a witch for their good works, and in Salem no
well,
less
fuck yeah.
Only took them 300 years for them to realize that witches can do
stop
good
stop killing them and
start giving them
cattle grazing rights
and tri-cornered hats.
What we have all been fucking working for.
Give me that
as
hat
women.
And those cow grazing rights.
I'd also like to be able to have my own bank account. Can we make that
and
happen?
And like a credit
too?
Card and maybe a mortgage one day, but you know.
Like the ability to vote.
Yeah. Details.
The hat's more important.
Yeah, more important. It's all about fashion after all. I did find an interesting article from 1991, so the same year as our murder, in which Lori actually, yes, that's right, you're right, the most important year, actually bemoans Salem because she was complaining that year in 91, they were commemorating the witch trials with a tercentenary, which means 300 years. I looked it up.
Okay.
I did mm-hmm. not know that term beforehand. Not that smart. Mm,
makes sense when you explain it.
It does, yes. I figured it probably meant some kind of time. And then I was right.
Yeah. Detective Lisi
on the scene.
Cracked the case.
But she was pissed off because she's like, look, you're commemorating these witches who died, but you're not acknowledging the witches like me who still live in Salem today.
Hell yeah, bitch. You tell him.
And the mayor at the time was like, well, the purpose of this memorial is to commemorate victims, not like dig into religion. But Lori was like, look, we don't want a parade. We don't need to show up in green makeup a la Wizard of Oz. We just want acknowledgement and respect.
That's what anyone is asking for on this earth.
She did
well done,
say
Lori.
One thing that I was like, don't agree with you there, Lori. Too far. Uh-oh. She said, witches of today think of what happened in Salem 300 years ago as our Holocaust. I was like,
oh. Except no one killed then was a witch.
And it
they
was
were
not
just
millions and millions of
no,
people.
It was like 16 women or yeah. something and one man mm-hmm. or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like less than.
Very not the same. At all.
Yeah.
So,
not like systematic.
No, racism.
Extermination. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So,
oh, okay. Sorry, okay. Lori. Cannot, and
playing
she
the victim
said it in
a little
couple
bit.
Articles about it. I was like, just
oh,
gotta drop
okay.
that Holocaust thing, Lori.
Yeah. And also, like, you're choosing to be
Jewish.
Yes.
No one was like, that's choosing a
chosen
to be Jewish.
Identity.
Yeah, exactly.
You were not born because your mom was a witch, and that means that you have to be a witch, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, like, are you a witch?
Sorry, no, I believe.
We are no. Joe Nichol.
Sorry.
He's infiltrated your mind.
Yes, I'm sorry. No, no, she's a witch. She's a witch.
No. We have a healthy skepticism.
We do. Healthy.
But not of her.
No, not of her. She's real. In another article, she acknowledged that her role as Salem's official witch made her one popular lady. She said one day she received 37 calls, even though her number was unpublished. She said, it's insane the interest people have in me.
A confident woman.
Yeah. I don't know how she came to the name Lori Cabot. She was born Mercedes Elizabeth Kiersey.
Okay.
And she said she'd been a witch since she was 16, having first become interested in the subject in the halls of the Boston Public Library. Dreamy, romantic.
Cool. I dig it.
As an adult, she chose to raise her daughters as witches, and now she spends her time teaching magic and, I quote, the science of her craft.
Okay.
She reels me back in and then she loses me completely.
She used to have a supply store in Salem, which was actually the first ever to sell like witchy stuff. Now an online store. I don't know if that's because there wasn't enough interest anymore or if it's just because she got too old. Not
rent's
sure.
Expensive in Salem, I imagine.
Yeah, totally. But in a particular article, she said, and I absolutely love this, that she doesn't use cauldrons, although she keeps two next to her fireplace, not far from her crystal ball and broom collection, because, and I quote, these days I use a Cuisinart.
A modern witch, she is.
She's taking all the romance out of it.
Come on, Lori. You wear black
robes.
Paint
a picture for us here.
After the film Witches of Eastwick came out in 1986, she started the Witches League for Public Awareness to counter the negative image witches had in pop culture. She said about the film,
I feel like witches were portrayed very positively in that film.
Freaking awesome movie.
I haven't seen it since I was a kid, so maybe I would not feel
that way now.
Today.
Well, maybe we wouldn't feel that way if we were, quote, real witches.
This is true.
She says,
we're culturally appropriating the name witch. Yeah.
Here are three women who have nothing better to do because they're so frustrated sexually than to get involved with witchcraft. They are not witches. If they are anything, they are weekend Satanists. They don't do one witchy thing in the whole film.
Cher is literally a witch. So that's my first counterpoint.
Also,
second, Lori, you're cosplaying Cher in your day to day. So again, let's calm down.
Let's calm down. You keep witch or cauldron on your fireplace.
That you admittedly do not use.
You use cuisine art, so who's the real witch?
Yes.
She said that the biggest myth surrounding witches is that they are linked with the Christian Satan and that they do harm with magic. She says, we don't even believe in the devil, which I kind of already knew about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Shockingly, she says that she believes there are 9 million practicing witches in America. And this was in 1991.
In America?
In America, yeah.
I thought maybe she was going to say like in the history of the world.
Today. Well, 1991.
In the 90s. Yeah,
and she didn't even know about these two witches yet. So 9 million and 2.
We hadn't even been born yet because we're so young.
So young. She said that there are two major laws of her religion, which I mentioned before. One is the threefold law, that whatever you do comes back to you three times, which I love that. And the second is that you may do no harm to anyone. She also says that
that feels
like not all witches agree
restrictive.
To that.
And also,
can we do
like
it to someone, like
a just, little bit of harm to some people
who deserve it. Lori, come on.
Yeah. Larry Nassar, a little bit of harm. Send a little hex that way. Mm-hmm. But don't they do hexes? Does she not agree?
Oh, she does a hex coming up.
So that seems harmful, Lori.
She also says that what you believe. Or she believes that what you think will come to be. And she likened spells to prayers and said witches are basically healers. So there you have it.
Cool.
Witchcraft in a nutshell, according to Lori Cabot.
Okay.
In all, I would say she's quite the interesting lady. Like I said, she's 90 years old now, still kicking. So she must be doing something right. And it's no surprise why the police chief decided she'd be a good way to figure out what happened to the missing
Love it.
Martha.
They could also just literally search the bay where the boat was.
Yeah, pretty easy.
But no, this is more fun.
Apparently, Lori had a good sense about these things. And when the chief called asking for her help, she need only ask for the poor woman's name, where she lived, and her date of birth. And with this information in hand, she went into what she calls an alpha state.
No. Alpha.
Alpha. I Googled what that means. Google says...
I feel like men on Instagram will misunderstand that.
Yeah, they will.
Please clarify for the men. It is an altered state of consciousness where brain waves register at 17 to 14 cycles per second.
How do you do that?
It's apparently associated with relaxation, meditation, dreaming, and apparently finding missing women.
This is the fucking science of witchcraft that I just laughed
at.
There
it is.
I should have been paying attention.
Yeah, come on. Just enter that alpha state and you can help police find missing women. Why haven't we been doing that this entire podcast? I don't know.
We've been wasting precious time.
Precious resources. So as Lori entered this alpha state, she was clearly able to see Martha on a sailboat with a man, and she got the feeling that Martha was naive and didn't anticipate the man's next move, clearly. Mm. As she tried to enjoy the ocean view, he tried making sexual advances toward her. She was disgusted, told him to return to shore, which very angry.
Oh, no.
And Lori says he turned into a beast and continued to grab her and fight with her. And he finally grabbed something on the boat and knocked her over the head with it. Lori said he then tied a small anchor to her ankle, weighed her down around the waist before throwing her overboard.
Oh, shit.
She told police that Martha's body would be found anchored underwater near a small offshore island in view of a lighthouse. And remember, this was before the lobster fisherman had found her body.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. Mere hours after her vision, Hooper Goodwin started bringing up those lobster pots near Cat Island, which is in view of a lighthouse, and discovered the decomposed body of Martha Brailsford tied to an anchor with a diver's belt attached to her waist, just where Lori said she'd be found.
Oh, shit.
Goodwin said, I was upset. I was in shock. I do not see any possible way it was an accident. The first thing I noticed was the hair, the long hair. I called the authorities and I called the harbor master. So 2 hours after finding poor Martha's naked body, police headed to Maimone's condo where his wife, Patricia, had just received her copy of that day's paper with headlines about the missing woman. And when police knocked on the door, she refused to open or even acknowledge them, causing the police to burst in and yell freeze before taking her into custody.
Oh, shit.
She was questioned, released, and was deemed not to be a suspect. Hmm. Maimone, however, was nowhere to be found.
Of course.
Imagine that. Not a flight risk. My ass. He had failed to report to work at Parker Brothers on Tuesday and again on Wednesday. And so police began a 3-day manhunt while also searching the waters near Cat Island for any clues. They hoped to find Martha's handbag or any sign of what had led to her death. At this point, Maimone could be anywhere. So police once again asked for Salem's favorite witch for help.
Yes.
And Lori was more than happy to do so, being the sweet old witch she was.
Love it.
She entered her alpha state again, and she said she saw Tom Maimone inside of a cabin. He was shaving, and he had plans to cross the border into Canada. So these are like some detailed visions. She offers to perform a binding spell, which is what sounds like a hex to me.
Yep.
To ensure that he wouldn't escape. And in the Unsolved Mysteries episode, it shows a reenactment of this. And she's got like this little grass doll that she's like literally binding up while saying Maimone's name over and over.
Like a little voodoo doll
Exactly.
thing. Cool.
And apparently it worked because 3 days later, neighbors of a cabin in Maine reported that there was a car parked out front of a cabin that was supposed to be vacant. A cabin just 20 miles from the Canadian border.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, Lori's good. She's a real witch, this bitch.
She is a real witch.
Yep. Police arrived to find a cabin with signs of forced entry and a very guilty Tom Maimone, who had, in fact, shaved off his mustache, just like Lori had said he would.
So he just broke into some random person's cabin.
Yeah, like a fucking little loser. I'm going to hide out in this. There was also something that said that at one point he stood across the street from a police office, from a police department in Maine, like thinking he was going to turn himself in and then didn't, of course, because
he's too cowardly. Yeah,
exactly. He was arrested on July 21st, and he actually told police that he was wanted for killing a woman in Massachusetts, like admitted to that.
Oh, wow.
But he was stopped from saying anymore because he hadn't yet been read his rights. And that almost made that statement thrown out in court. But thankfully, the judge ruled that it was admissible. So thank Satan.
Wow.
He was indicted on July 31st, and his... let me say that again because I said it weird. 31st. He was indicted.
What in the
He was indicted on July 31st, and his court-appointed attorney said, "I think the circumstances are ripe with innocent explanations. He hadn't committed a felony, but he certainly tried to cover up what did happen with the consequences that it cast suspicions on him."
Oh, fuck you.
Right?
I get that they have to say that because like they're supposed to
be on the side of their client.
Show that they did... Well, like, if they... do a shitty job, then he can appeal and say that he had like inadequate representation. But still,
how do you sleep at
night? Shut the fuck up. Yeah, truly.
Like if he were worried about suspicion, why not be like, "Help, my friend fell overboard. Help me. Help me."
Yes.
I need help searching.
Jump in the water.
Yeah, like anything other than what he did. As it goes, when people like Maimone are arrested, cracks started to form in his story. And not just the story that he'd told police. Early in their friendship, he'd told Martha and her husband, Brian, that he was a widower, saying that his wife had died from cancer. So, like, they feel really bad for him.
Totally.
And she wasn't the first person he'd used the sob story on. Others had been brought onto his boat feeling sorry for old Tom because they thought his wife was dead. And his wife, meanwhile, is living in their condo in Salem, having no idea that she's apparently dead.
He has an alive wife?
Yeah, she's alive, living happily in their condo.
Oh, well, not living happily anymore.
Nope. Apparently dead, according to Tom.
Oh, my God.
Maimone, by many accounts, was pretty slick. He told many tall tales. Ooh. He convinced people he had college degrees that he didn't, conned his way into jobs he had no experience for. Like I said earlier, bragged he'd seen combat while in the army, which he hadn't. And
how did he tell people that he was a widower? When he, like, literally is in neighbors with people.
I don't know.
Does he never leave the fucking house with his wife? That's wild.
Not.
That's ballsy. It's, yeah,
super ballsy.
Shows the ego of a murderer.
Wait till you hear this one, because this is super ballsy. In his current wife, Patricia, the one he's been telling people is dead from cancer, believed she was his second wife, when in fact she was his fourth. His three previous wives had divorced him, citing cruel and abusive treatment.
Oh, man.
You'll remember earlier in the episode, I told you that he told Martha he was going to be laid off. So she was helping him with his resume.
Because he was about to commit a murder.
Yeah. But apparently that layoff was a ruse because everyone else they spoke with said, like, no, I think he was happy with his job. I don't know anything about him getting fired.
Oh, my God.
It is shocking to me that he managed to charm so many women because he was not a looker. He was 6'3", 200 pounds, thinning hair, dark mustache, and not that those things can't result in a good-looking guy, but he was not one of those. Look him up. Look up his picture.
Wait, what's his name again?
Thomas Maimone. M-A-I-M-O-N-I. Nothing good. Nothing good there.
Not doing it for me.
Not doing it for anybody.
I like a tall man, and this is not it.
No. Mm-mm. Not good.
He's got the cul-de-sac hairdo. Just shave it. If it's leaving, just shave it.
Don't swipe it over.
No.
I've never heard that. The cul-de-sac hairdo. That's hilarious.
You know, because look, it looks like you could just drive into a cul-de-sac.
Oh, but that's a recent photo. You should look at him from type in 1991. I feel like he actually looks better old than he does when he was younger.
Oh, no.
Yeah, which is not good.
1991. Is that him?
Yeah.
Yeah, he does actually somehow.
I know. Isn't that bizarre? He looks like a little more, maybe because he looks like grandpa-y. Grandpas always kind of like win you over, even though they shouldn't, because they can be just as creepy.
Why does it look like in these, is this him also?
No, I don't know who that is. You know what is weird though?
Of this guy.
When I was researching this, I was using newspapers.com because it's amazing. And next to the article about Maimone killing Martha and whatever, there was an article about two other women who had been kidnapped by a sailor who'd like tried doing lewd things on his boat with him. They survived. They were fine. But it was the same paper. And I was like, what the hell? Like, what's up with Salem, man?
What is happening on boats?
I don't know.
Is this her?
Yeah. Isn't she lovely?
She's so beautiful.
See how she's in that random flower bush? She was like, what are you doing in there?
Yes.
Also, speaking of so resources, this is just me being an idiot. I am one of the websites I used was wickedlocal.com. And I was like, oh, is this like for wicked spooky things, like witchy things? And then I realized
this
it was
is
like,
just wicked, like in the Boston way. Boston, it's like very like,
it's wicked local, man.
Like super local.
Yeah, like that's amazing.
No, that's hilarious.
As soon as I went to the front thing, page of the news spooky website, I was like, oh, this is all about Boston stuff. Never mind.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So Maimone obviously pleads not guilty. And even though he says he's not guilty, he immediately starts trying to transfer his assets to his wife, Patricia. But Martha's husband, Brian, was faster and convinces a judge to freeze all of Maimone's assets. And he files a suit against him for $360,000 for intentionally, negligently, carelessly, and unlawfully causing his wife's death. So good on Brian. I'm not sure if he won that or not, but at least he stopped.
Let's hope.
Maimone from sending all his stuff to Patricia. An autopsy revealed that poor Martha had died from drowning and her body was too badly decomposed to tell whether or not she'd been sexually assaulted. In 1992, Maimone's lawyers asked for the indictment to be dismissed, claiming that he suffers from, and I quote, a chronic tendency to lie and has always used denial and avoidance to deal with difficult issues in his life. They said he was under extreme stress and was unable to tell the difference between fiction and reality when he was interviewed by police.
Well, then he needs to be in jail for the rest of his life.
Agreed. His lawyers claimed that errors were made in the jury proceedings, and coupled with the error in not reading him his Miranda rights when he was arrested in Maine, the indictment should be dropped. Thank Satan, the judge did not agree.
Agreed.
Maimone was charged with first-degree murder for killing Martha Brailsford, and during his trial, he admitted that Martha had indeed died aboard his boat, and that he had dumped her body overboard in a panic. During the trial, two separate women testified that he'd brought them onto his boat as well, and that he'd taken his clothes off in front of them. So he has a pattern here. Oh, a nasty motherfucker does that.
Oh, can you imagine?
No.
Oh, this is so creepy.
Honestly, I would just jump off the boat, I think, and be like, all right, I'm going to catch a ride with someone else, swim to shore, I'm out of here.
I would rather drown than continue to see this terrifying man.
I can doggy paddle the fuck he's for a while. To. Yeah, exactly. Even his own lawyer, Jeffrey Danner, said, he's pathetic. If he's charged with being a jerk, a liar, pathetic, and getting rid of a body, he's guilty. But there's absolutely no evidence that he caused her death. I was like, so you hate your client too. Things that you're saying about him.
Oh my God.
The assistant district attorney asked, if that's the case, why did he never throw her a life preserver when the boom knocked her overboard? Or was it a rogue wave?
Why didn't he dive in?
Yeah, like, why are you changing your story so much? It's hard to keep track of what actually happened, according to Maimone.
Mm-hmm.
A psychologist was brought in by the defense who deemed that Maimone was a pathological liar who abhorred violence and lived in a complex fantasy world that required constant support from others, like the women he'd brought onto his boat.
Ugh.
And he said that when Brailsford died by accident, because remember, Maimone couldn't have done it, his world was threatened. So he freaked out, lapsed into a form of psychosis. And a second psychologist agrees and says that he just wanted to make the problem magically disappear, so he did by throwing her body overboard.
Oh my God.
And that was the psychosis that he apparently entered.
Hmm.
Apparently,
he knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah, exactly. I don't believe any disorder here. His disorder is that he's like a narcissistic
murderer,
sexual deviant. Piece of shit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, when he himself testified, he starts to cry, causing one of Brailsford's family members to laugh out loud because they're just like, you fucking prick. And the judge issues a stern warning, although I think it's pretty hilarious that they laughed in court at his bullshit tears.
Shut the fuck up, you little bitch.
And who can blame them? Because listen to some of the shit that he spewed.
Oh, God.
He claimed that he didn't see their relationship as sexual at all. He felt she was truly bonded to him. And he said, Tom Maimone died on that day, too. That person doesn't exist anymore. Shut up, Tom.
Great. So then that's fine if this...
Yeah, it doesn't matter if you go to jail forever.
Walking corpse goes to jail if you've already died.
He's already dead. In court, he claimed that the waves that knocked Martha into the water were waves from passing fishing trawlers that broadsided his sailboat, sending it rocking. He said that Martha was on the foredeck pulling down the mainsail when the waves hit, and then he saw her thrown airborne coming toward him, but she didn't go overboard. Instead, he saw her crawling up the mast of the sailboat, and she looked scared or stunned, and then as he tried to get the boat under control, she fell off and was struggling to swim.
She doesn't know how to swim, this bitch who loves the ocean.
Right, and does windsurfing and shit. And ready for the drama. He says, I was screaming. I blew my voice right out screaming. It was just panic. I asked her to fight. You asshole.
Oh my God, fuck this guy.
Fuck this guy. Yeah, like, how dare you?
Also, like, if a fishing boat passes you and you're out in the bay, the waves are not that big. Mm-mm. It's not like, whoa, the boat's out of control.
Especially for a woman who lives her life to sail and wind surf. And like, she knows how to. And why would she climb up the mast? Like, it just doesn't.
It doesn't make any sense.
Then, of course, he says he pulled her onto the boat, tries to resuscitate her, but her face was ashen and she was already cold to the touch. Does one become cold to the touch that quickly, Haley, as someone who's been around dying people?
No.
I didn't think so.
Not with immediacy.
Nope.
And also, like, if you... He's just such a fucking liar. Yeah. You try to resuscitate her, and you start heading back towards shore, and you call for help, and you look for other boats.
Yeah, you don't just
say, well, now time to...
Throw her back in the water. Bury her at sea. Yeah, no.
And fucking weigh her body down.
Right? With a diver's belt and an anchor. Naked.
Yeah, why is she nude?
Yeah. Oh, because remember, he tried to warm her up with towels. Because he didn't want her to die. He cared about her so much.
Fuck this guy. This is one of those times where I'm like, I'm against death penalty.
Not today.
No, I'm not. not today. Fucking fry this guy.
When asked why he didn't call the Coast Guard, he said it's because he was in a compromising situation. It looked like he'd killed her. Sure did. Sure does.
Yeah,
he
I wonder did. Why it looked like that, motherfucker. Wait, so he had radio. Right, this is the 90s. He had radio on his boat. He could have called for help.
Yeah, could have done anything other
than
what he did.
Fuck this guy.
Yeah. His lawyer, Danner's closing statement really pisses me off. He said, this is not the profile of a murderer. Tom Maimone is someone who always wanted to be somebody. Ironically, he got his wish. But even Tom Maimone never dreamed the somebody he'd become would be so universally hated and scorned. Boo fucking who. Like,
yeah, I'm so sorry for you that everyone hates you because you killed someone. That must be really hard.
Somebody. Exactly.
Must be really hard to live with the natural consequences of your own decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Why did you put a diving belt around her waist? Why did you change your story so many times? Why did you lie to her husband's face? Why did you flee to Maine in hopes of crossing
into
Canada?
Why don't you just shave your head when all of your hair is falling out?
Get rid of that cul-de-sac on
so
your head.
So many bad decisions were made in this.
Because he's guilty. And thank God the jury agreed. On February 12th, 1993, Thomas Maimone was convicted of second-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison.
Okay.
It took the jury of 9 men and 3 women, which is pretty lopsided, only 7.5 hours to come to a decision.
I thought you were going to say 7.5 minutes. I was like, fuck yeah.
That would have been way better.
No, they need to talk about it. Okay, 7.5 hours.
I mean, really,
that's
what
reasonable.
Is it to talk about? I guess.
That's still quick.
I guess you could say, it's like beyond
a
reasonable
degree,
doubt.
Is it second degree?
Yeah. When the verdict was read, this motherfucker, Maimone, chewed his gum, expressed no emotion, and declined to make a statement. Mm. Where are your tears now, old Tommy boy?
Yeah, you little bitch.
Yep. Martha had a twin sister. And in court, she said tearfully that it was painfully ironic that Martha's wonderful attributes were her undoing. She was never happier than when she was rescuing a lost or stray animal. This very component provided a vulnerability to be exploited. Her reaching out to a cry for understanding was the means by which her voice was silenced forever. Very sad.
So sad.
Because his conviction was second-degree murder and not premeditated, Maimone would be up for parole in 15 years. And believe me, that fucker tried to appeal. Yes, way too soon. And he appealed over and over. He claimed that Lori Cabot, the witch, her involvement was part of a conspiracy to frame him. He said witnesses were coached to lie by the prosecution. And he kept on trying to sell that lie about a rogue wave knocking Martha overboard. In 2015, he filed a rambling 10-page petition that stated he'd been wrongfully imprisoned. And this was the fifth time he did so since 2000.
Oh my God.
He called in this like rambling petition, he calls the story that the prosecution told the official version, abbreviated as OV, and says, get ready for this word vomit. It's a fanciful narrative supported not by science or fact, but by exaggeration, gossip, and embellishment of said gossip manufactured to appear as fact.
Okay, sir.
Come on, dude. Just deal with it. You're in prison. What? You're not going to live much longer. Just like fucking deal with it.
Sorry.
Sorry, not sorry. He said it's impossible to make sexual advances towards someone in a place as busy as the Salem Harbor, and argued that Martha was his crew, so there wouldn't be any sexual tension anyhow. And in regard to the...
There's never sexual tension with coworkers. No. That never happens.
Apparently, he's never walked below
deck.
Also,
there's also no sexual tension when it's just you fucking perving out for this woman who has literally zero interest in you. That's not called sexual tension. No, that's called attraction. That's one-sided.
Yes, it's called you are a predator. That's what it's called.
You're a predator. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He also said that the women who claimed he'd gotten naked and made sexual advances toward.
Yeah, I was going to say. This is his MO.
Those were concocted by the prosecutor. Those weren't real. And he wrote, where's the sex? Like...
no one had it with
you. No, because you were disgusting. Yeah.
Because you're a fucking creep.
And then in one appeal.
No woman likes a man who just stands in front of her and undresses.
Let me tell you, penises are like not an attractive thing. Like
not an aesthetically pleasing organ.
No, like, I mean, they have their
place. Let's keep a little mystery.
Yeah. And they can be great. But like, I don't want to just see one dangling in front of me. Never
unprompted.
There's a reason
in the light
no
of day
one likes dick pics because it's not nice to look at. Like it's just I'm sorry. It's just not. This is perhaps the worst of all. In one appeal, he basically blames her husband Brian for her death, saying that Brian knew she'd been sailing with him that day, and that if it had been his wife, he'd have a flotilla of boats out to search for her.
What the fuck?
Yeah, just
Fuck this
such
guy.
A son of a bitch. Thankfully, though, God.
Please tell me he was murdered in jail.
No, but he will have no further chances to appeal because he died in 2017. He'd been suffering from some chronic illness, and he died at the Beth Israel
Medical
Center in
Boston. Called being a little bitch.
Yeah, it's deadly, apparently, being a little bitch.
Lethal bitchiness.
Lethal bitchiness. Until his death, he maintained that he didn't kill Martha, and his only sin was throwing her body overboard in a state of panic.
Well, that's also a very vast sin as well. Yeah. Disposing of a corpse.
You
My only
not
sin
do.
Was disposing. Okay, yeah, okay, don't do that either.
Why did you not give her the right to be buried by her loved ones if she only just
and like
fell
someone
over?
Who maybe could have been resuscitated?
Yep. Yep.
That is a prime candidate for resuscitation. Mm-hmm. A young, healthy person who has an emergency or experiences some event that causes their heart to stop beating.
There you have
like,
it.
That's who survives resuscitation.
You heard it here, folks. Haley's on the scene. Listen to Haley. Maimone's a liar.
Break those ribs. Pound on that woman's chest.
This story was turned into a book by a local author named Margaret Press. Of course, was featured on an episode of Unsolved Mysteries, has been Love on it. A few investigation discovery shows. And in one news article from newspapers.com, I found that it was possibly going to be made into a film that they were going to title The Anchorman. That movie was never made. And the Anchorman we do have is undoubtedly a lot better.
Much better. Yeah. And higher production value.
Much, much, much better.
Oh, that's incredible.
As of 2006, her husband Brian had moved to Florida. He had not remarried. But he did return every time Maimone appealed to speak against his character and said this guy cannot be released.
Keep this fucker in jail. Yeah.
Today, a water fountain stands in memory of Martha. It was built by neighborhood children at a beach called Juniper Beach in Salem Willows. It's made up of bits and pieces of pottery, ceramics, and pieces of her jewelry, and it looks out onto the ocean just like she used to do.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Brian's mother, her mother-in-law, who I said she was close with, remembers Martha so fondly and said that she's in nature all around her, in the flowers and the birds and the happy moments of her life.
Oh,
so
that's really sweet.
That is the story of how a witch helped solve a murder and that motherfucker paid for it.
Fuck yeah.
There you have
it. Great story. Great storytelling.
Oh, thank you.
You're most welcome.
I also really need to share, this is another complete tangent, but I have to share it because it cracked me up so much. I'm going to send it to you.
Please share.
And I'm going to read it because I found it on newspapers.com, just complete happenstance. It was an article
searching for
right next to the article I was looking for.
All right.
It reads, racial attacks blot Marky Mark's past. Rap star serves 45 days in jail, blames alcohol and drugs. Within a week, Marky Mark has gone from living large, trading chit-chat with Jay Leno, flexing his pecs on billboards, and adding this month's penthouse to his growing collection of magazine cover appearances to a tarnished pop icon. The hard-bodied pinup boy, whose real name is Mark Wahlberg, is fighting the erosion of his carefully sculpted image, the camera-friendly persona of mischievous man-child with a streetwise attitude.
Oh, that's hilarious. I mean, what's not
funny is that he, you know, like, did this racial attack against...
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't either. But I did now, thanks to newspapers.com. The shit you can find on there.
Newspapers.com.
Yeah, he beat a Vietnamese man, I guess. So, fuck you, Mark Wahlberg.
He's very... Have you seen his Instagram?
No.
He's very Catholic.
Oh, that makes sense.
Like, posts videos of himself praying at the altar in his home.
Who does he have taking those? Oh, I don't like that.
No, he's...
But
it's like, he's like an archetype of a human.
Yeah.
Do you know what I
mean?
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, oh, you're not a real person. Oh, you are. Oh,
you are.
Wow.
I could not...
I don't know anyone like you.
I was shocked to see Marky Mark in this 1993 newspaper.
That's amazing.
I'm telling you, people, newspapers.com is just... Chef's kiss. It is an amazing resource. I don't know why really you need it, but it's fun. It's fun to have.
You need it. Everyone should have a subscription.
I was texting Katie and I was like, I feel
that should
like
be our first sponsor.
We've said that before. They need to sponsor us, newspapers.com. Yeah. I feel like a really fun Instagram account would be just like random ass headlines.
Kooky newspapers.
Yeah, from like forever ago.
You should start that.
I should.
You could go. You could monetize
because
that.
I find the funniest headlines and I'm like, what is this about?
This is so random.
Yeah, like, yeah. I saw one that was like, let's see what it says. Judge lets stores be even more convenient because they can stay open from midnight to 5 a.m.
That's amazing.
Another, stench again raises stink. What?
They had too much fun.
They did.
Those writers.
There you go, folks.
Amazing.
Just get your subscription to newspapers.com.
Wow. Thank you. That was an excellent story.
You're welcome. Good. I'm glad. Now tell us about something sad.
Okay. Not a ton of info here, but this is new. And when I looked at, it was just like I found it's two sisters and I found them on the FBI thing.
Oh, no.
And there wasn't a ton of information. Mm-hmm. And then so I looked it up. Like, I just Googled their names, yeah. And there's not a ton of information. Yeah. This is relatively new. So it's these two sisters named Tamara and Iris Perez, or maybe it's Tamara. I don't know. But I think it's Tamara. Tamara and Iris Perez. I think they're 14 and 15 years old. And they live with adoptive parents. They were adopted away from their biological mom. But I think it happened maybe like later in life.
Okay.
Because what I read was, until March of this year, they lived in Florida with their adoptive parents. And then in March of this year, their parents moved them to Michigan after they were found in their biological mother's home in Port St. Lucie, Florida.
Oh.
And so, like, I guess they had some contact with their bio mom and, like, maybe
like ran away back to their mom or something.
Yeah, like, maybe they ran away back to their mom. So their adoptive parents... And like, I couldn't figure out how long they'd been with adoptive parents. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not that long. I'm not really sure. Had moved them to Michigan in March of this year. And then they were last seen on June 28th. So like,
oh yeah, not that long ago.
Last week, a couple weeks ago, heading towards woods near their home in Hutton Lake, Michigan. Mm-hmm. And surveillance video shows a newer model white Jeep leaving the area at the time that they disappeared.
Oh, no.
So police... released photos of the Jeep, but there's like speculation, like, is that someone from their biological family coming to take them back? And they were like willingly leaving, which like I guess in some ways that's good because they're safe. But obviously if they were not in their home anymore, there's a reason.
Also heartbreaking for the adoptive parents.
I know. And not like I always side with Child Protective Services because I don't.
Yeah.
But the like threshold of removing kids from a home is like really high. Mm-hmm. Like,
so there's a reason
it has to be pretty
it.
Bad. Mm-hmm. So if they were removed from that home, it's because it wasn't a safe place for them to be. Aww. So let's see, where is, so the FBI got involved. So that's good.
Yeah.
And they said that the Iris has a star tattoo on the left side of her neck, which is crazy because these are the children, 14 and 15. How does she have a tattoo?
That's probably why they were removed from their home.
Like, really, maybe neglectful parenting. Mm-hmm. They have ties to Port St. Lucie,
mm-hmm.
I don't know, in Florida, and Lake Worth, Florida, and Winchester, Tennessee. And let me see what their descriptions are. Okay, Iris is 5 feet tall, 140 pounds. They're both black. And Tamara is 5'3", 120 pounds. Oh. And yeah, anyone who has any information is asked to contact Roscommon County Sheriff's Office at 989-275-5101.
Well, I hope that they are found, or I hope that they're safe wherever they are. I hope that they're okay.
I'm like, I think they're probably like safe from, like, I don't real think they harm. Were. I'm hoping they weren't kidnapped. Yeah. Like, yeah, like real harm, but also like, are their needs going to be met, and are they in like a safe, supportive environment? I don't
know. Just imagine how painful it would be to like just want nothing more than to be with your mom, even if she's not the safe place for you. But like, obviously, you want to be back
because that's all
mom.
You know. Yeah. It's your mom. Yeah, yeah. It's so complicated.
Heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us.
Okay, tell us a good thing.
My good thing is that Katie and Emmett are coming to visit on Sunday and meet Eloise, and I'm so excited.
I'm so jealous. But then I was like, I could fucking fly there, Haley, you dumb bitch. It's your fault that Katie's going there first. That was my whole train of thought. When I was like, Katie's going, oh my dumb God, I can't believe she's going first. And then I was like, that's on me. I could buy a plane
come
to
anytime, any day.
I will just show up at your house unannounced.
I'm here. yeah, very excited. You know, we don't really have any like plans, which is great. It's just going to be, you know, adventuring locally, having fun. Emmett has never been to a place with mountains like that. Well, I guess he was in Stehekin, but he was like two. He and Russ were so little.
This is very different.
Yeah, very different. So very excited for him to experience like Alaska mountains. And you know, Katie and I first met in Alaska. And so it's kind of like bringing it all back together. So very excited for that. What is your good thing?
Okay, my good thing is that if you know me and have listened to this podcast, you know that number one thing on my bucket list is seeing Aurora Borealis, the Northern Lights.
How did I not see this coming?
And... because it's just so overwhelming. So I have always wanted to see the Northern Lights. I've been part of this like Aurora Chasers Washington State Facebook group for ages. Mm-hmm. And there's been like a few times where it's like, I could like drive out a couple hours, but it's like,
is it worth it? Yeah.
I kind of wanted my first time seeing them to be like actually really good, you know? Because like what you see here, even on a really good day.
Yeah.
It's nothing like the shows that you guys get. Yeah. Like nothing.
But still
but
cool.
We were like sitting on the couch. Like I knew there was a good forecast on Friday. I knew that it was like looking promising. And I was up in Canada because we've been spending like every waking moment with my family due to previously mentioned like end of life issues. So we were up on Friday night and we're just like sitting on the couch and I knew the numbers were good and my parents live kind of in the middle of nowhere. So it was like, you know, light pollution would be not as bad, you know, and they live like somewhere that's really close. Like they live really close to a place where you could just drive a few minutes and it's like a really good view, like facing north. And
I wondered if that picture was from their house or not.
Mm-hmm. It's like 5 minutes away. This place called High Point because it's very high up.
Perfect.
So we're like sitting on the couch and I'm like, should we? I'm like, well, mom, like maybe later on we'll go. Like if we're still awake around like 11 is like 10:30, 11 darkest. Is when it's going to be really good. And then like at 10:45, because it's a full moon too. So it's like you got to do it before the moon rise. Yeah. So at like 10:45, all these photos start rolling in from people in like Tacoma, Snohomish, like Arlington on my Facebook group. God. And they're like really good. And I was like, mom, do you want to go right now? Like, let's get in the car. I showed her. I was like, let's get in the car right now. She's like, let's do it.
Yes, Lori.
Matt and my dad and Russ, everyone else was asleep. So we just like hop in the car, like speed up there. And I'm like looking out the windows. We're getting closer and I can't see anything.
On wine.
yeah. We had both. I was like, oh, like, we should drive.
It's fine. 5 minutes.
We fell out of wine. It's fine. We were below the legal limit, probably. And so we like get up there and I'm like, oh my God, I think I see something. Oh, and then like, you know, your phone can see so much more. Yeah. So then I hold up the phone. I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. And my mom's like, oh my God. We're like, this is the Northern Lights. We can see it. And I like could kind of see the pillars, like very, very faint. It's very faint, but like enough that I could see it with my naked eyeballs. Eye.
How cool to do that with your mom. That's so sweet.
It was so special. Aww. And like, as previously mentioned, it's been sort of a shitty couple weeks in our household. So it was like really a nice moment of sort of like levity and
that makes me happiness. So happy. And
it was really exciting. And then I was also like, I can't wait to actually see them.
Like made you even more stoked for when that's
It made
amazing.
Me even more excited to like see them for real.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Mm-hmm.
That's great. That is a really good thing.
Yeah. So it was really
and
good.
And I'm clearly not a witch because I did not foresee you saying that, even though I knew it was good.
Like that time when you said, next week I'm going to cover a bear. And then you open the next episode with, what are you afraid of in the forest? And I listed every other hazard except for a bear.
Just like that.
Maybe I'm not a witch either.
Oh, man. We're learning. We're learning.
We just have
science.
To work. We just have to work harder. Yeah. We haven't learned the science yet. I don't know how to put my brain in alpha mode or whatever.
And to
I could fucking cast a hex. Me too. I could cast the shit out of a hex. Same. I'll tell you that much for free.
Yep.
Might just be the wine talking.
Oh well. On that note, friends, please like us, follow us, rate us, check us out online, easybakepodcast.com, Instagram, easybakepodcast. Send us your scariest stories, your hot news tips at theeasybakepod@gmail.com. And find us wherever you get your podcast, which you're doing right now. I don't need to tell you to do that.
Thank you for doing that. Yes. And keep doing
keep
it.
Listening.
Tell your friends.
Tell your friends.
Tell your mother.
Subscribe. Hit all the buttons that there are.
Like our Instagram posts. Yes. Slide into our DMs. Yes,
which you're already doing.
Tell us you love us.
Yes. Yeah. And as always, don't forget to keep it spooky.
And make it sweet.
Happy hunting!